This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You're listening to The West Wing Weekly. I'm Hrishikesh Hirway.
And I'm Joshua Molina.
And today, we're joined by special guest Kristen Chenoweth to tell us all about her time playing Annabeth on The West Wing. It was a great conversation, so without further ado, let's get right into it. Should we start at the beginning?
Yeah.
How did you first end up on The West Wing?
Well, there's a little-known fact about the beginnings of The West Wing for me. I had been offered a part early on The West Wing. Aaron Sorkin had seen me in a TV movie version of The Music Man. And at that same time, I was offered Wicked, the Broadway show. And West Wing had been on, I think, a year or two. It was new and it was the hit that it was. You know, it was just changing the world. And I didn't know what to do because I had invested in creating this role of Glinda on Broadway, but it's The West Wing. And I would really like to work with this amazing cast, right? So I made the decision. I prayed about it a lot and took some time and ended up doing Wicked. And I thought, well, that's the end of that. So I got really kind of depressed.
In fairness, Wicked went well.
Yeah. Wicked did all right.
It wasn't a terrible choice.
No, and the things that start with W seems to do all right
for
me.
There you go.
So then I was leaving Wicked to go do Bewitched with Nora Ephron. And so I moved to L.A. and I get this call from John Wells, would you come in and read for a part? And I thought, but I was offered a part before. But
read? How dare you, sir? How dare you?
How dare you?
Have you heard of Wicked?
But you know, I understood because the cast and the writing is so specific and special and unique that if you're not able to get on the train, then you're going to be left at the station. And I told my manager, yes, I will go read. And I remember I had a very long monologue, and that was back when my memory was pretty good. And I just was excited, and I did my due diligence about the White House. And I had sung there, but I had no idea who anyone was. So I just did some research, and I went in and read, and I got the part. Now, I don't even know if Josh knows this story, and you can tell me if I'm talking too much, but I never get to tell it, okay?
Let's hear it.
My first day, I'm in my office. Remember my little office? We had some good scenes in there.
Oh, yeah.
As Annabeth Schott, the deputy press secretary. And I was forgot to get the sides that they give out, the script that they give out for you to read. And I opened my desk drawer, and there were a pair of sides in there. And I thought, great, I can just like cheat sort of and look, because I was nervous. I wanted to prove myself. And I looked down on the call sheet where my name would have been, and it had a different name.
Huh.
And I was like, they've already fired me, and they've replaced me. And so now I'm just going to do the best I can to get through the scene, right? Or should I even try? Like, so it was touch-ups, and I was really trying hard not to cry and not, you know, and just pull it together. And Darlene, who did my hair, said, and remember, this is day one, and I'm pretty much, I mean, Josh knows, when you work with me, it's kind of like, it is what it is. I don't change that much.
Right away. Yeah, that's how I remember.
Right?
Media, I'm like, oh, okay.
We all have our moods,
right,
but,
here
you
we
know,
go.
Yeah. So she goes, what's the matter? And I go, just so you know, this will probably be my last day. And she goes, why? And I said, because I just saw on the sides, they've already recast me. She goes, girl, that was last week.
You replaced her.
And I never looked at the date, nor did I look at the sides after that. So, because I didn't think to, but can you believe that story?
That's unbelievable.
Did you know that?
No, I never knew that. That would be a rough, I'd have a hard time processing that.
I don't.
I probably would just get in my car and drive home.
I almost did, but I thought, no, you've got the day, you're going to finish your work, and then they can fire you. Wow, that happened. And I never tell it because the actress that's name was there is a very, very good, very fine actress. It just, you know, sometimes things just don't gel. Right.
Yeah, that just is this business that I think a lot of people don't realize. Mm-hmm. Sometimes things don't work out and sometimes you can't even put your finger on what it is. There are a lot of intangibles. Sometimes it's from the actor's point of view, it's not working out and it doesn't feel right and they want out.
Lots of times.
Yeah, things happen.
There's a story that Richard Schiff told us way back when we were in the first season about when he was auditioning for the part of Toby, and that it was down between him and it was between
Eugene
Richard
Levy.
And Eugene Levy. And he thought for sure that Eugene Levy had gotten it. You know, for a moment you're able to imagine this alternate universe where somebody else is, but then it disappears in a puff of smoke because obviously Richard Schiff is so indelibly
Toby. He is Toby.
Yeah. And I feel the same way. I can't imagine anybody else, like maybe somebody else might have played something, but it wouldn't have ended up with the character that we got.
No. And, you know, God, Eugene, to be in that company, you know, he is incredible in Schitt's Creek and everything he's done.
Yeah, I love that show.
Oh, I love it. It's like one of my favorites. And that to me just goes to show you that there are things that work out the way they're supposed to.
Yeah.
And this cast, and I was only there the last two seasons. It was only supposed to be three episodes, like an arc.
Oh, when you first came in for that audition, it was just for three episodes.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Yeah, and my second day was with Richard Schiff. And so imagine Richard. And Richard, if you're listening to this, you know that I love you. And you know that I find you.
Here comes a butt.
Oh, I love him so much. And here's perky, happy little Christy Chenoweth from Broken Arrow, Oklahoma. And there's Richard Schiff. And I'm like, hi, I'm so excited to be working with you. I can't believe, you know, my accent was really thick back then. And he was just like, I remember him looking at me like, what is this in front of me? But do you know that when we were on camera together, something magical happened?
Well.
And a pleasant good morning to you.
You find someone?
Slept extremely well. Thank you so much for asking.
Well, sleep less and get us a new press secretary, will you?
I'm sorry.
But it's a testament to all the cast. First of all, they made me feel welcome. Josh made me feel incredibly welcome and loved and like, we got you, you know? So you start to feel confident and like you can do it. But Richard, my character had to teach him how to be a public speaker.
That's right.
And it was funny.
It was very funny. You were a breath of fresh air. You brought an energy to the show, a little injection of energy that we needed.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And how long did it take for you to feel like you found your place in that ensemble?
You know, it's, again, I keep saying it about the cast, but the writers, everybody made me feel so loved that it didn't take long. And I have forged friendships that I still have today, a very special one, especially with Allison. And also John Spencer and I had known each other before. He was sort of like a mentor to me. So when I came, he just kept saying, you got this, kid. Don't you be nervous. And I was like, I don't even know what Uzbekistan is. You know, he taught me a lot. He taught me to be patient with myself. And then, of course, our relationship on the show developed into, are they going to be a couple, which was cracking me and him up. But I had a relationship with John before the show. And then, of course, being there, you know, singing at his memorial was one of the hardest things I've ever done, but also one of the most special memories I ever had.
How had you known John previously?
Do you know that John had come to see me in plays and musicals on Broadway?
He was a fan.
He came backstage and he introduced himself once, and I thought, no way, because I knew him from other things, and then West Wing. And then I thought, now I'm going to get to work with him? So he'd come to see me in shows.
I've told this story earlier on this, speaking of your performing and your singing earlier on the podcast, that, I mean, I knew who you were when you joined the show, but when it really fully sank in was when I went to see you at Disney Hall, and I think you delightfully invited us, and so I went with my wife, and they said your name, and the entire place stood up, and I was like, wait a minute.
Who is this girl?
She's a giant star. Like, I knew she was kind of a big deal, but I'm like, well, they just said her name. She hasn't even walked out yet. The entire place was on its feet. And then you blew the roof off of the place. I was like, oh,
do you know
okay.
Do you know what it meant that y'all all were there? Y'all all were there.
I have amazing. Well, I know I was. I mean, I really remember. It was incredible.
You said something to me.
Fantastic.
Thank you, Josh. And I have this weird memory. I can't remember what I did yesterday, but I remember very specific moments. So Josh And we obviously got to work together early on, and we had one of my most favorite scenes is with Josh Malina that I've ever done on camera. But you had said to me that night, I sang an aria from Candide called Glitter and Be
Glitter
Gay.
Glitter and Be Gay.
Annette, of course, these trinkets are endearing. Oh, I'm oh so glad my sapphire is a star. Oh, I rather like a 20-carat earring. If I'm not pure, at least my jewels are.
And after the show, I don't know if you remember, but you go, you sang Glitter and Be Gay. You sang from Candide. I said, yes. And you go, I had no idea. And just the deadpan. I had no idea. And the next day, day or two at work, when he saw me, he was like, you sang from Candide, Bernstein. And then
well, I'm a massive fan. And that particular aria is incredibly challenging. Mm-hmm. And you did it with an incredible amount of slapstick, incredibly funny blocking. I was like, who is this? Like, who would even attempt to do this in concert with that much staging? It blew me away.
Thank you.
What was your favorite scene with Josh?
Well, it was like, again, early on, maybe week number one or two, once I finally understood that I wasn't going to be fired, he came in to deliver a bunch of information, and then
That was my job, yeah. Largely. That could be any of my scenes, but glad I did it once with you.
I had to correct you, and I can't remember what it was.
That's funny.
But, you know, his character was like, again, like, you sang Candide. It was kind of like, wait a minute. And my character, what was so attractive to me about her, which is why I wanted to do it so bad, is here's this girl, and I realize that I know that what I sound like when I speak, Betty Boop or a helium-sucked person. I know that I'm petite. I know that there's like a aura about me that, you know, people don't maybe think I have a brain. But Annabeth, she was so smart. And when I got to not correct him, but like tell him what it was going to be and his face, it was one of the most... It's so subtle comedy.
It's busy. People don't have time to pat each other on the back, and I don't want that. But gosh, it's just nice to hear that they think I'm good. Sorry.
I can come back later.
No, the boots are over. The haircut was hasty, and in the debates, he seems too interested in what the other candidates are saying. His S's are slushy, his A's are flat. He exhales too loud and inhales too often, but it's nothing. Nothing that can't be fixed. And I'm honored. Really honored that you asked.
The thing about West Wing that made me so happy was, no, it's not a comedy, but it's people being people, and in life, that's funny.
Mm-hmm.
It was like he delivered all this jargon, and I delivered all this jargon back, and I was just, I was so happy. You know that I rewatched it the other night.
Oh, did you? I was going to ask, was it the first time you'd seen any West Wing in years, or?
No, about every couple years, I'd say.
That's nice.
I watch it, because first of all, I go, man, I actually did all right. You know, I want to make sure that, well, it also makes me miss the time that we were living in, you know, and it was a great memory.
Yeah.
A great memory and a role that not a lot of people would have put me in. So I watch it, and then I watch the relationships that I developed with, you know, you and John and Martin, who knew I was scared to fly, and on the weekends I would go and sing concerts, and he brought me back a rosary from the Vatican. And he said, this has been blessed by the Pope. I was like, well, I never met him, but I'll take that. Give me that right now. But those kinds of moments, you know.
Special.
And stalkered. One of the first scenes I had with her, again, I had to talk a lot, and I was nervous because it's Rizzo in Greece, and, you know.
Are you the one who's going to teach me proper speedway decorum?
How to win friends and influence yokels, yes, ma'am.
I had to have constant conversations with myself to say, calm down, don't let your nervousness with who you're working with, which to me, all of them were legends by this point, get in the way of your craft. And so I think that's the only way I got through it.
I want to talk a little bit more about that idea, though, that because of your demeanor and your appearance, that you don't get to play roles very often like Annabeth, and that Annabeth gets to, in the show, sort of upend people's expectations.
I loved it.
And I'm sure that must happen to you in real life as well. I mean, you have a master's degree. You're mm-hmm. like, you're no slouch. So is that something you end up encountering in real life as well?
I encounter it on a daily. And what's so funny is, you know, like I was just at the Denver Symphony, and those people obviously know, you know, my ability. But in life, just in general, at the bank, let's say, if I go in and I'm like, hi, and, you know, the counter's past my nose, I can't see because I'm petite. And then I'm like, can I have a, you know, I'd like to put this in, deposit or whatever. And it's almost like, yeah, little girl, you can wait. Oof. Or it's almost a dismissive thing. And I know it's also my size. You know, I'm not, for the people listening who don't know, I'm only 4'11". I never thought of myself as a little person, but I am tiny. That is also, people don't always take you seriously. When you're from the Bible Belt and you talk like this, people think maybe you're missing a chromosome. And I have to remind people on it, and I like surprising people a lot. It's fun to watch people's facial expressions change when I actually can speak and have an opinion and, you know, I'm well educated. I worked hard for my degrees and I still study and I read, and I just think that people think I'm just like glitter and rainbows all the time. And it's not that way.
Well, after The West Wing, did it change for you the kind of roles that you were offered because you got to have this role where those kinds of stereotypes were disproven?
Yes, I got a great role on Pushing Daisies. I got a great role on Glee, though a lot of people go, I mean, I played a drunk has-been singer, high school star, and that, trust me, that ain't me. I mean, but I did get to use music. In Pushing Daisies, it was such a unique look.
I love that show so much.
I do too. And to play the underdog and just getting the opportunity to kind of represent the audience as to, she's the one that was questioning everything. I did a movie that not many people saw that is my one of my most proud. It's called Into Temptation. It's about a woman who has been abused, sexually abused by her father her whole life, and grew up Catholic and decides she wants to end her life. But before she does so, she goes to the priest to say, I'd like to be forgiven in advance. And then her journey of him, it's his journey finding her because he wants to make it okay. Those kinds of roles, and they're independent movies, and I've loved them. And of course, I've done the RVs and the Four Christmases, and, you know, I've got a Netflix movie coming out this spring that's very, very funny. And
what's that called?
It's called Holidate. And
oh, yeah, that's got a great cast.
Yeah, it's got a great cast. And I just did a Hallmark movie. It's a very different kind of role for me. So I do believe that West Wing was the beginning or the forefront for me to start doing those, to be seen in a different light.
You and I almost did a David Kelly series. We did a David Kelly pilot that you starred in. I had a small role in.
No, but why?
Oh, I wanted that to go.
Why wanted that to go?
Oh, I wanted that one to go.
Me too. I'm never over it. I played a lawyer who had a tic. A tic. And he would give me all this dialogue. And she had like a weird tic. And I mean, when do you ever get to play a role like that?
It was very cool. Am I wrong? Was her name Skippy?
Her name was Skippy. Skippy Pylon.
Skippy Pylon, exactly. That was a crazy, I mean, maybe it was just too weird, but it was pretty wild. David Kelly script. There was music involved.
Oh, yeah.
Hugh Bonneville was in it. Tom Hollander.
Yes.
It was Kurt Fuller.
We had a great
time. Cheno starring.
We had a great time. I think it, if I may, I think it could have been ahead of its time.
I think so, too.
It seems like it's perfectly of its time, honestly. I mean, you've got the other master of high-speed dialogue, and I don't know. It just seems like
I know.
Yeah.
We thought no way could we be this lucky, you know, to get
apparently
to do it again.
Yeah,
but that's the business.
Yeah. That is the business.
Right now, we're in season 7, so we're halfway through season 7, actually. And I wanted to ask you about this shift within the story of Annabeth and Leo being sort of paired together.
Yes.
Do you remember when you found out that that was going to be kind of the new arc for your character?
Do I? Because John and I giggled. Well, first of all, we were very close, just in life. But
your chemistry on screen.
We had
it. You can tell. Yeah,
yeah.
It was just there.
It was there. We were at a table read, and John Wells had told me to put on my seatbelt. And I was like, gulp. What does that mean? And John and I usually sat next to each other at the table reads. And our characters had started to develop this repartee, which was very fun to play. Sort of like I would tease him, not in a laughing way, but just, you know, push his buttons. And he would look at me like, listen, you might be smart, but, you know, that was our character.
Yeah.
We laughed about a scene where you literally manhandled his face trying to get him to stop smirking.
It was so fun.
It was very cute.
It was so fun. And he was like, manhandle me. I mean, he literally was like, go
Bring
for it,
it.
Kristen. So we sat down to read the table read, and there was a line in parentheses that said, is he falling for her? And I looked at John. He looked at me and I grabbed his thigh. And of course, now I'd be carted off to show business jail. But we had that relationship.
It was a different time.
It was a different time. I grabbed his thigh. I was like, what is happening? And he goes, Kristen, I think they see us as like a burgeoning romantic couple. And we started laughing so hard. I was like choking. And so he gives me a Jolly Rancher. And the Jolly Rancher plays a very important part of the story because he always had them. Anyway, we would laugh. We would go do our scenes. And then we would laugh. We would meet in the alley. And we would laugh. And we would eat lunch. And we would laugh. But I said to him at one point, I said, you know, I can see. I said, don't take this in an inappropriate way, but I can see how Annabeth is falling for Leo, and I can see how Leo is. And I said, it's because in life we love each other, and maybe not that way, but we did have a thing. We just had a thing. I don't know what I even mean, but yeah, we cracked up.
Yeah. I was talking to Eli Addy about the dynamic between the two characters, and I said something like that I was kind of like Spencer Tracy and Katharine Hepburn.
Yes.
And Eli countered with, it's like Spencer Tracy and Ginger Rogers.
Oh my gosh, she did.
Pretty good.
I'll take it. I'll take it because people also forget, and I can't believe I'm bringing this up about Ginger Rogers, what a great actress she was. But yeah. Because of the way she looked and seemed.
Oh, there you go.
Right? But that is such a compliment. Thank you, Eli. Oh, that's so nice.
We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll have more with Kristen Chenoweth.
And now, back to the show.
We're in a strange place right now in the podcast because we've come to the episode in the timeline of when the episode's aired. John Spencer's passed away. The last episode that we discussed, Martin Sheen sort of prefaces it and says, he's gone, but we can think of no better tribute than to show you the final episodes that he's worked on.
Yeah.
What did you sing at his memorial and how did you choose that?
So weird. I can't believe this has actually happened. When I say weird, I mean wonderful weird. He had obviously had seen me in different shows, but he had seen me in Wicked. And he wanted... He said, if I ever die before you, and he made a joke, I want you to sing For Good at my funeral. And I was like, well, that is not going to happen, and stop talking. You know, just stop talking. Well, I get the call, and I just, you know, like everybody, and they had all worked with him. Remember, this was a family that I had joined. I was not in the original. They had all been together, but I knew John aside, and one of his very good friends called. She was kind of putting it together, and she'd said, this is what he would have wanted, and he told me. And I was like, he told me too.
Well, I don't know if I believe that's true, but I know I'm who I am today because I knew you like a
comet. So that's how it happened.
That's remarkable.
And I've
that he himself told you.
He did. I mean, it's, again, that's not a story I tell, but it did happen. And I almost feel like, again, and before I got up there, I was like, I don't want to do this. You know, I'm such a perfectionist, and I wanted to sing good. But I was like, I can't sing good. My larynx is in my brain. But I thought, who cares? This is about John. Just sing. And if it sucks, it sucks. But who cares? It's his tribute. And that's, I don't remember it very well. I just remember doing it. For him, you know.
Do you have a favorite Annabeth Leo scene?
Well, I mean, the smirking one is the one that immediately comes to mind. It's great that you brought that up, Josh, because we just had fun. I have a scene in the elevator, too, where we're in there, and it's almost like we're flirting. The flirting. I call it the flirting scene.
Yeah.
And right as the doors close, like, he looks at me. It was just so fun.
I just think it's better while we're spending so much time together that we try and keep our distance whenever possible.
Keep our distance?
Because of the tension.
What tension?
And we actually were flirting. Not to say that we were such good friends, but we slid easily into the flirting thing.
The thing that's so remarkable for me about that scene is that Annabeth is the one to sort of shut down the idea of the two of them romantically, mm-hmm. but in so doing, actually like ramps up the heat of what was actually happening. Like when Leo's speaking, it seems like, is it flirting or is it not? Mm-hmm. But then the way you played and the script really shows us that like Annabeth is the one who sees it and thinks it and is going to shut it down by acknowledging it.
Well, and I thought, because I wanted to know what was going to happen, and I'm sure, I'm positive that I bugged the writers. Mm-hmm. And they said, well, just let us, we're going to play this out. And I thought, okay, if I'm a woman and I'm in a professional experience and I'm attracted to somebody that is my boss or somebody that I'm mm-hmm. working with very closely, I'm going to try to be appropriate.
Right.
But there is a thing that women can do, and each woman out there listening to me, you know of what I speak, where we can shut it down and it makes the person kind of inquire more in their heart. And also, it's the forbidden. Especially then, it was like, you don't date people you work with, right? Yeah, I just decided in my mind and heart, I hoped that I think it was leading there. That's my opinion. I've never been told that. I think it was leading there. I think it was going to be a really fun thing to discover. But I thought she was going to try to be professional, but still lead him on in her shutting downness. Does that even make sense?
Yes. Yeah. You're hanging a closed sign on the door, but also not locking it.
That's exactly right.
Let me ask you this. You may not want to talk about it, but even though you joined the show in the post-Sorkin years, you and Aaron did become good friends.
We knew each other. Yes, we did. Yes, we dated for some time on and off. It was just one of those relationships that I will always cherish because how I met Aaron, I saw him, of course, when he won the Emmy. I was watching, I think I was doing a Broadway show, and I was watching him. I was like, that man just won for West Wing. Oh, my gosh, that's so cool. And then Music Man aired, and I got a fan letter, a beautiful letter that I still have to this day, that said the bridge scene that you did when you sang Till There Was You was one of the most beautiful, cinematic, well-sung congratulations. And I thought, I will never throw this away. And I had never met Aaron. And then when I went to LA to do Bewitched and I got the call to do West Wing, I knew John, who I love John. I mean, John is the reason that I was on the show ultimately. But Aaron sent me flowers and said, just my luck, I'm not on the show anymore, but you are. That's another card I kept. I'm kind of a hopeless romantic that way, but I didn't.
As is he.
As is he. That's exactly right. But I didn't think I thought he was just being nice. So my publicist said, he wants to get your number. And I thought, oh, that's so nice. And I need to thank him for the flowers. So I called. They gave me his number. I called. I left a message. And I sang, there were bells on the hill, but I never heard them ringing. Thank you so much for the flowers, Mr. Sorkin. I hope to meet you in person one day. That's so sweet.
Oh, wow.
So then he called me back like, very quickly, and then we had dinner. And again, I'm just thinking, he's just being nice. And you know, sparks flew. And, you know, I look back on that time that we were together, not together, of some of the most growing, evolving, learning times, and some of the most romantic, sweet, precious times. And I'm sorry, Aaron, I know that you don't talk about your romantic life, but I don't talk about mine very much either, but I will always say that I loved him so much. I still do. I'm so proud of him. Talk about someone who, when you think about it, The West Wing was really, in some ways, just the beginning for him. I mean, he had so much more to do to give the world, and he continues to do it. And I'm just proud of him. I don't talk to him much, just because of life, really. But I'm proud of him.
Oh, those are lovely memories. You're two of my favorite people, so I love that you had each other for that time.
I think it's great.
And I'm guessing that's a voicemail that he still has.
Oh, I don't know, but I still have
I suspect
his letters.
So.
I'm like, I'm not throwing these letters from a genius away. Are you kidding?
That's how I feel about my voicemails from Josh.
Well, there you go. See? Mm-hmm. Now I want one, Josh.
Your on and offedness coincided with your being on the show. And did you talk shop at all? Or did he really not want to hear about it?
I think he had, as I recall, gosh, has it been a second? As I recall, he wanted to talk about it, but he also, it was hard because that was his baby.
That's right.
And he was writing something else at the time. And just because he left didn't mean that he didn't miss everybody. And I think I was able to make him laugh too and saying, guess what happened today? But I know that it was probably a little bit like, I miss everybody. And one time he came on the set to finish a discussion that we were having. And I just remember the whole, everybody stopping and practically bowing, you know, and I'm like, it's just Aaron. But I mean, I was bowing. I've always bowed to him. But yeah, I think he'll always, that's his baby.
Oh, sure.
That's his baby.
No question.
He has quite a few. And just like I have music and songs, there are some children I'm more proud of than others. But I imagine that West Wing is one of his.
I've got two, and there's some that I'm more proud than others. And I think they know which. I think they know their order.
Hilarious.
Just kidding.
I love it.
I kind of like you both.
I just can't believe that they're grown up.
Time. Neither can I.
Time. Where does it go?
One of the things that Aaron was so, you know, famous for was writing his characters towards the actor and shaping them as he sort of got more information, watching them interpret his lines. And even though he wasn't on the show when you were, I feel like all the writing staff around him really absorbed that.
Yes.
And it feels like that's something that continued as new people were added in later seasons. Were you conscious of that, that slowly the character of Annabeth was being modeled in ways that resembled you?
Yes. I felt like the writers, and this is a testament to Mr. Sorkin as well, and the people that he hired and trusted and believed in, they followed his legacy perfectly with his vision. And John was also the perfect person to basically take over that show. They all honored what Aaron had started. And yes, I felt like they were beginning to write for Annabeth. I'm sure that they saw me and John Spencer laughing our butts off. I'm sure that they saw me try to hug Richard Schiff on many occasions and ask him if he liked my hairdo. I'm sure that they paid attention and watched that. Also, back then, you know, I still have I used to have a photographic memory. I think they started to understand, too, that not only can I talk, but I can memorize it and understand it. And if I don't understand it, I'll figure it out, you know. And that show, again, it's so smart and clever. But with all the cleverness and the smartness, there is an element of heart and true life when someone trips on camera or papers go flying, which I know became like on SNL, they did a whole thing about it. But it was the first of its kind. Now I'll be doing a movie or a TV show, and a person will say to me, well, we're going to do a walk and talk now. And I'm like, yeah, that was invented on a little show called The West Wing. Ever heard of it? Tommy Schlamme might have had a little something to do with that. So when you get started in a monologue and you've got to walk the halls and you've got Brad Whitford behind you, who is making farting noises and trying to unlace. Now, remember, we were jokesters. So I
realized. Oh, you took those as farting noises.
It wasn't actually him.
Interesting.
I mean, he was constantly
doing. That's a lovely way to put it.
I know, right? Lovely. And I've still stayed friendly with him as well. But I just think, you know, they saw us. And the real testament is to those of us who joined later. Jimmy Smith, I mean, he was like, they got him. And then maybe people were starting to kind of root for, I mean, how do you not root for Bartlett? But there was the beginnings of a different regime that maybe someone could like. Wow, what must that be like? Anyway, we're not going to go there, but I'm just so proud I was a part of it.
You have such an impressive and vast career. Where does it fall for you? Do people...
Depends
stop
on which
you.
Podcast she's doing.
Yeah, I guess that's week. Fair enough.
This week.
Diplomacy aside,
West Wing is
obviously there's
one.
A special place in your memory. Do you have fans, West Wing fans, or do most people know
oh my
you from,
gosh, yes, Josh.
I mean, I know you do because people have been very eager for us to get you onto the podcast.
This makes me feel so good because, you know, coming in again at the last 2 years, I always felt like I was accepted and people, you know, once I kind of proved myself, if you will, they took me in. Y'all all took me in. But that is an original family that can't be beaten and has not, in my opinion. I mean, Veep is pretty close, but that is a special, special once-in-a-lifetime cast that was together. When I'm at a concert, singing a concert, oh, it happens every week. People will come up, and when I sign things, always West Wing is there.
That's
and that makes me very proud. And I mean, yeah, A lot of times, I will get stopped in airports. I don't really live anywhere. I live in an airport. Different ones all over the country and the world. And they will say, the West Wing, the West Wing. That always makes me so happy. And then they'll say, so you don't really wear glasses? I'm like, well, I do now, but I didn't then.
Can we ask you about what else? You've got these...
We mentioned Holiday from Netflix. You have a Hallmark movie.
Yes,
Hallmark. And you have an album coming out.
Yes.
Can you tell us about that?
Comes out right away, and I'm so proud of it. It's very different for me. I went in a very different direction. Of course, women are having a renaissance, if you will. But I have always felt like a strong woman, and I've been lucky to have strong women influences in my life. And music, obviously, is a big part of that for me. And I didn't set out to make a female empowerment record. That's not what happened. It's called For the Girls, but it's not, I didn't know that's what it was going to be. I just simply wrote down a list of 313 songs of that I wanted
to
sing.
Narrow it down.
I know. Part 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And I started seeing that it was Dolly, and it was Doris Day, and it was Judy, and it was Eva Cassidy, and it was Linda Ronstadt, and it was Edie Gourmet, and Leslie Gore, and Carole King, because my mom wore the Tapestry record out. And I thought, I need to do this with some of my favorite female, in tribute to them, in celebration, really, of them. And that's how For the Girls evolved, and I've got some of the best music ever on it. I've collaborated with Jennifer Hudson and Reba McEntire in I'm a Woman. We do that. And we're very, very, all three very different artists. But if you recall, Dolly, a long time ago, did two records actually with Emmylou Harrison, Linda Ronstadt. And I thought, how can they all be on a record? And then it killed. And I thought, this is music. Why can't we all three? And it really just is awesome. And then I still can't believe she said yes. I asked Dolly Parton to join me in on the record, and we sing I Will Always Love You together.
Wow.
And then I asked Ariana Grande, yeah, you're going to like it, Ariana Grande to sing, I've known her since she was about 7 or 8, so she sings the Leslie Gore, You Don't Own Me. Well, I say Leslie Gore. Many people have done it, but I have a tendency to go back to the original source.
Right.
And for me, it was Leslie's version, so those are the guest stars that I've had. And then there's Desperado on there, which I know Glenn Frey wrote, but first time I heard it, Linda sang it. And I, as a young child, thought, why can't a girl sing that? So I had it fully orchestrated in my style, and that's how it came together.
You know, a song of yours gets heavy rotation both at my house and in my car, and always when I'm with my daughter Isabel, is your cover of Taylor the Latte Boy.
I'm so sorry.
We love that song.
I bet
we
know.
Cannot play it enough.
My brother said to me when his kids were growing up, they said, Kristen, I love you. I can't hear Taylor the Latte Boy anymore.
I can.
Thank you, Josh. I keep asking the female Zena and Marcy who wrote it. I've sung that song for 17 years, and when I don't sing it, people get mad.
It's fantastic.
Latte boy, bring me Java, bring me joy. Oh, Taylor, the latte boy. I love him, I love him, I love him.
So I'd like to get. I said, will you please write the sequel? So Taylor's now, they've
right,
together.
It's a brilliant story song.
Thank you.
I would like to hear what happens.
Let's put it into the universe.
Oh, yes, yes. Oh.
We could, right?
Isabel and I would be very excited to hear part two.
I'm going
to
do it just for y'all. I'm going to actually call Marcy and Zena when we leave here and say, girls, write it.
Please. I heartily endorse that plan.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
This was awesome. We finally got you. Cheno.
Thank you for
Cheno
having me.
Cheno in the booth.
It was awesome.
Thank you for doing this.
Of course.
All right.
Fantastic.
I think that does it for another episode of the West Wing Weekly.
Our thanks to the delightful Kristen Chenoweth for joining us. You can follow her on Instagram or Twitter at @kchenoweth. Thanks to Nick Song, Margaret Miller, and Zach McNeese for helping us make this episode.
And thanks to Radiotopia and PRX for including us in their exclusive collection of forward-thinking podcasts, about which you can find out more at radiotopia.fm.
Okay.
Okay.
What's next?
Thank you.
Radiotopia. From PR.